And happy to be joined now by Blake Murphy, editor of Raptors Republic, and does some writing also with Sportsnet.ca. Hey, Blake, long time no talk. How's your summer?
It's going pretty well. Thanks for having me on. How's yours going, Ben?
It's good, I think. This last like month or so, it's been busy, which is it's not bad, but it's kind of been a whirlwind. And I'm going on vacation tomorrow, so I'm trying to keep it together for this radio show. But yeah, it's been good. Good, man. It's been a good summer for the Raptors as well, I think. I mean, not spectacular. They missed out on a couple of free agent acquisitions. But I think the bigger deal, and it, not that it was ever in doubt, locking up Masai Ujiri, multi-year deal. And Jeff Weltman, I guess, who was heavily pursued around the league. He's the new GM. That's a good sign. Maybe not an unexpected one, though, Blake.
Yeah, it's a great move. From the Masai Ujiri perspective, you know, he had 2 years left on his deal. I don't think it was ever really in doubt that he was staying here long term. He's going to get, you know, terms haven't been reported, but he was making $3 million annually before. I'd imagine he's getting a significant raise on that. And then, you know, the Raptors have given him lots in a non-financial capacity, too, where, you know, he wanted that D-League team pushed through quickly. They helped make that work while Tim Leiwicki was still here. Leiwicki helped get the All-Star game here. The Raptors dumped a lot of money into the new BioSteel Center. You know, from a charitable perspective, Ujiri has been given the freedom and additional resources to push a lot of those endeavors that are really important to him. And then for the other guys, I mean, Ujiri dropping the GM title doesn't mean a whole lot in terms of the power structure of the team. When other teams wanted to make trades in the past, they would call Masai Ujiri or Jeff Weltman. But what Ujiri giving up that title allows the Raptors to do is promote Weltman to GM, which means, you know, there's not really a need for Weltman to look for a GM job with another team. And that's something that, you know, there were whispers that weren't particularly quiet that could be happening sometime in the next couple of off seasons. Weltman had been in an assistant GM role since, I think, 2009 with the Bucks, and is really well thought of around the league. So this move gets him a bump in title and a little bit more responsibility, and that helps keep him in-house. And then the trickle-down from that is that they also promoted Bobby Webster and added an assistant general manager title to his job description. And he's a guy they plucked from the league office a couple years ago, and he's considered a young rising star in terms of front office executives around the league. So in total, all these moves are kind of similar to what they did this offseason, where Casey was retained, DeRozan was retained. So this core now from the front office down that has produced the best three seasons in franchise history is now here for the foreseeable future, with the only remaining question mark being what happens to Kyle Lowry this next offseason. And I think, you know, I think that's almost as clear as what happened with Masai Ujiri. So, you know, best three seasons of franchise history, and they're rolling it all back. And it's hard to be too upset with that.
Well, and what does it mean that nobody really lost any sleep over any of these things? Like I think even going back to DeMar DeRozan, because right out of the chute, he said he wanted to remain a Raptor. That was done real quickly. Dwayne Casey, Masai Ujiri, Jeff Weltman, there was really never a doubt that any of these guys were coming back. And this is a franchise that doesn't exactly have a long history of being able to retain good people and players wanting to stay there, stay here, and front office people, coaches, all of that. It's a new day in Raptorville, I guess.
Yeah, it's, you know, anyone who's disappointed with a relatively quiet offseason should, you know, play back what you just said. This is an organization that for 21 years has had a reputation as a loser. Damon Stoudemire wanted to leave, and then Vince Carter left, Tracy McGrady left, Chris Bosh left. No coach has ever done a good enough job to warrant staying more than 3, maybe 4 years. And there's been, you know, other than Colangelo's tenure, it's kind of been a lot of turnover in the front office too. So, you know, rolling everything back, coming off the best three-season stretch, coming off the 56-win year, where now you look forward a little bit, and a little down the line, the Raptors are going to be a team that's made the playoffs a handful of years in a row and won 50 games a handful of years in a row and been deep into the playoffs. You know, depending on how you project them for this year, they should be a pretty safe bet to at least make the second round. Those things are important, and it's, you know, people want linear development, and because the Raptors jumped to the conference finals this year, they should have made the moves to jump to the finals next year. But that wasn't realistic with the position they're in. And if you just retain, you know, if you kind of just hold steady as it is and go through another great season like the one they had, eventually, and it's happening more rapidly than people might realize, you know, the Raptors are building up this kind of organizational equity where they're not the Raptors with the reputation that they had 4 or 5 years ago. They're the Raptors who, you know, newer fans or people who with a shorter memory, you know, the Raptors who have been in the mix for several years in a row, and they're going to be in the mix with this core again this year. So, you know, as slow and obvious as their offseason may have been, there's really nothing wrong with holding steady with where they've been the last little bit and you know, just continuing to kind of build internally and build a reputation with the same core.
Blake, there's so much time to get outraged at the lack of respect headed towards the Raptors going into this season. But let's start it already, because I already feel like they're being disrespected. It's all about the Celtics. Oh, what a great job the Celtics did continuing to add to that core. And sure, they did, 100%. Raptors were 2 wins away from making an NBA Finals. I just feel like already, and maybe I'll be proven incorrect when we do get a little closer to the start of the regular season. But like in the brief conversations I've heard, NBA people talking about this season, the Eastern Conference, nobody pays the Raptors any mind again, coming off what was their best season in franchise history.
Yeah, this is kind of like a psychological bias thing, I think, where if you were to, you know, scrap everything about how the teams got here and just look at the Raptors versus the Celtics and what they've done, you know, those teams are probably on close to equal footing, and the Raptors probably get the edge given the more recent playoff experience and the fact that, you know, there are fewer, okay, if this fits kind of questions, because, you know, the Celtics added Al Horford, which is huge, but we still have to kind of see how they look with that. The difference is that the Celtics made the big move and had that number 3 pick in Jaylen Brown, who's a player that I really like. So I think people look and, oh, the Celtics won, you know, 48 games last year, and then they added Al Horford. They had a high draft pick. So it looks like they've gained more ground, and maybe because of that, people are a little more excited about the Celtics. But the gap that they had to make up was also pretty significant, and it's not as if the Raptors got, you know, notably worse. They might win a few games fewer because of, you know, the Biombo for Sullinger trade-off, getting a little younger. The fact that, you know, winning 56 games is really, really hard in general, and, you know, you're an injury away from not being in the mix for 56 games. But you look at the quality of these teams up and down, and, you know, they're pretty close to even. You probably give the Raptors a slight edge. And then, you know, if you're looking ahead to, which, and this is several steps too far ahead at this point, but you look ahead to a potential second-round playoff series, and, you know, it's not as if the Celtics are a better team objectively than the Raptors, at least until we see it. So if anyone's writing the Raptors off just because the Celtics made moves, you know, I think it's a little bit early for that, given that it's not as if the Raptors have gotten particularly worse, and they're still a young team that could have some, you know, internal development that helps make up for a loss of Biombo or, you know, what else, whatever else can happen over the course of a season.
Talking to Blake Murphy, editor of Raptors Republic, also does some writing at sportsnet.ca. You mentioned those first couple of round victories and the 7-game wins over the Pacers and the Heat last season, and how at times it wasn't all that like appealing to the eye, the brand of basketball the Raptors played in the postseason, and the first couple of games in Cleveland. But they won 2 games against the Cavs. That did happen. And, not on the road. And then, yeah, game 6 was yet another blowout as well. I don't know how to evaluate that, essentially, because, all of last season, it was start to finish where they ended up, unqualified success for the Toronto Raptors. But that did happen, and I wonder if that is part of the reason why they don't get as much respect as they should, considering the end location. They were 2 wins away from an NBA Finals, but yeah, the route to get there was a little ugly. Should we just throw that out and just talk about the ends justifying the means, or should we actually take that into account when we're looking ahead to 2016-2017?
Yeah, that's tough, because I mean, those first 2 playoff series were, you know, as ugly as wins get. DeMar Carroll's banged up. Jonas Valanciunas missed some time in the Miami series. They weren't great. At the same time, you know, this is a team that this core had been to the playoffs twice, but they hadn't won a playoff series before. Kyle Lowry was dealing with the elbow issue. DeMar DeRozan had that epic slump to start the playoffs. It's not as if the Raptors were playing their best basketball, and we found out their best basketball was hardly good enough to beat the Pacers or beat the Heat. It was that the Raptors couldn't find that kind of best basketball until late in each series. So, you know, it's tough to tell whether that's an indictment on them because they didn't play well in the playoffs once again, or whether that's, you know, something people should be positive about, because they didn't play well in the playoffs, and they still went to the Eastern Conference Finals and took two games off the Cavs. So, you know, it's kind of a situation where I think it's important to look at the fact that the Raptors won 56 games and made the Eastern Conference Finals. And however you got there, it takes a really good team to get that far. You don't get that far by accident. And then, you know, you could talk me into the fact that the Raptors played that poorly at times and gained that experience, where that same, you know, the same five-man core, the core is larger than five, but that same Lowry, DeRozan, Ross, Patterson, Valanciunas core has now gone to three playoffs in a row together. They've played in five playoff series. You know, that shouldn't happen again, injuries willing, where they come out and they come out flat in two playoff series. But I would have said the same entering last year's playoffs. So, you know, who knows how that really goes. I don't think there's anything tangible about this team that, you know, they're not a good playoff team for whatever reason. I think they just didn't play particularly well for two series. And then Cleveland is just really good, and they employ LeBron James. So
Yeah, that'll help. But the Raptors employ Jakob Poeltl, who I imagine is going to be a big part of this team right away. And again, I know it's super early, but it's Labor Day, and I want to talk about this stuff, and I know you do as well, Blake. But if you had to handicap what the Raptors do with the five, obviously Jonas Valanciunas is going to start there. I mean, Bebe, I'm a little intrigued about Bebe.
Did you see his new tattoo?
I was going through your Twitter feed and saw that so it's like a hand with a Canadian flag on it, right?
And a Brazilian flag shaking hands. Yeah, so he thinks he's here for the long term anyway.
he's rather committed. Or if he gets traded or ends up somewhere else, I guess he's going to live here once he retires or something. Yeah, it's a ballsy move, Bebe. What do you see as far as the minutes distribution at the five there? And obviously that'll change as the season progresses, and I imagine it'll take some time for the rookies to get their feet wet at the NBA level. But do you see them giving the opportunity to Nogueira, if he can earn it, to be that guy off the bench to play the five?
Yeah, I think that's the plan originally. From talking to Dwayne Casey at Las Vegas Summer League in July, you know, they're looking for certain things from Nogueira coming into training camp. The big one is just consistency, which is, you know, a tough thing to peg down for a young player, even though it's his third year in the league. You know, big men peak a little later and they figure it out a little later. So the Raptors want consistency from Nogueira that he hasn't shown before, but I think he'll get the first crack at it. At the same time, last year they entered training camp and Nogueira Biyombo was supposed to be kind of an open competition for that backup center role. So Nogueira is going to have to take it and run with it. I think, you know, Sullinger is probably going to start at the four the way it sounds right now. But I think they're going to use some looks where Sullinger is kind of a small five. The Raptors like playing with Amari Carroll at the four for short minutes. That opens up more minutes for them to run two-point guard lineups or to get Norm Powell some minutes if he starts the season behind Terrence Ross on the depth chart. And they were really effective last year when they went kind of smallish. And they didn't have a small center like Sullinger to be able to do that capably on the offensive end. So they should be able to do that even more this year. So I think Poeltl's a little further down the depth chart to start the season than people may think for a number nine pick. And that shouldn't be discouraging, really. He's a 20-year-old big man, and big men generally take a little longer to get going and get the feet wet unless they're a very special talent. So I'd expect Poeltl, you know, not a ton of minutes in the first month of the season. Once the D-League fires up in late November, he'll probably see pretty significant time there for a little bit. And then if Nogueira stumbles or, you know, there's an injury somewhere, I think the team thinks Poeltl can come in and play some backup minutes right now. They'd just rather have him, you know, developing on the sidelines and in the D-League to start.
I forgot that you were at Summer League. How excited should we be for Pascal Siakam? Because I'm already excited. I've seen him like three times.
For like 12 minutes that I saw?
yeah, exactly. Will he go into the Hall of Fame wearing a Raptor uniform?
You'd think so, right? The Raptors even they picked up his brother at the D-League level. So the whole Siakam family is
An
important part of the Raptors organization now. No, he's going to be a lot of fun when he plays. I don't think he's going to play, he's going to be in a similar situation to Poeltl where he's got Patterson and Sullinger ahead of him on the depth chart. Carroll's going to play some small four. So it's not a clear path to minutes for him right now. I do think the energy and physicality that he brings, you know, those kind of hustle guys can usually come in and that energy plays in a small short minute role, like 3 or 4 minutes at a time. From a skill perspective, there's still some stuff that he needs to work on. Defensively, obviously, there's a lot of potential there. Dwayne Casey likes to compare him to Bo Outlaw, who, you know, if you ever look back at what advanced metrics look like in the 90s and early 2000s, Bo Outlaw was a stud defensively. But, you know, he needs a little bit of polish. So he only played 2 years of college. He hasn't been playing organized ball all that long, and there's a lot to be excited about. But for this year, his role probably tops out at, you know, short minute energy guy unless an injury strikes at some point.
So DeLon Wright is obviously he's third on the third on the point guard depth chart behind Kyle Lowry and Corey Joseph. And yeah, the shoulder injury is pretty significant. Apparently, it's going to be close to the new year when he's ready to return from that thing, which is tough, man, because you would have liked to seen another year of development, and then who knows what happens with Kyle Lowry, as you mentioned, has the option, which you figure he's going to opt out of at the end of this season. Where does DeLon Wright factor in, and how much does that injury affect his development with this Raptors team?
Yeah, it's a tough one. The big thing for me, I think, is that he loses training camp. I don't think, you know, if he misses November and parts of December, I don't think he's missing out on a ton of playing time because, you know, Kyle Lowry and Corey Joseph are ahead of him on the depth chart. The big thing is he's going to miss out on training camp, which is a lot of time to get comfortable with guys and learn the system a little better even. And then the fact that, you know, his biggest offseason goal this year was to add size in the gym, and seeing him in Vegas just like a month and a half after the season had ended, it was looking like it was coming along pretty well. He had added some pretty significant upper body size. And I don't know if the shoulder injury is going to limit that a little bit, where next year he'll come in and you know, it's the same thing. He needs to add some strength, because if he's going to play minutes for this team, it's going to have to come in, if it's not garbage time, in 2-point guard sets. And because he's 6'5", he's probably going to draw the shooting guard defensively a lot of the time. So that's kind of his path to playing time on this team, is being able to get some minutes at the 2 and some multi-point guard looks. And I don't know if staying out of the gym for 4 months, that might slow him down in that regard. And then the bigger question for the Raptors, I think, is whether you keep an extra point guard with that 15th roster spot, because Wright might not be ready for the first month or 2 months of the season, and he might need a D-League conditioning stint or something like that. So, you know, if I'm handicapping it now, I'd probably give Fred VanVleet a slight edge in the training camp battle for that final spot, just so they would have another point guard in the event of, you know, Lowry needing a day off or a Corey Joseph injury or anything like that. So, you know, Wright's injury kind of throws a bunch of things into question. And for him personally, I can only imagine how disappointed he is, because he was looking good at summer league. He'd added that nice size. And he's a guy, he could play backup minutes in the NBA right now. There's just not a spot for him. So for him now to, you know, lose his opportunity to kind of force the Raptors' hand, it's pretty disappointing.
Yeah. And his perimeter defense, we know he was drafted primarily on that defense. Probably already at very much an NBA level. Before we let you go, Blake, outside of the Raptors, what are you most looking forward to? Maybe let's talk about the Warriors, because it's almost boring and everybody's take of them being able to, once again, go massively high when it comes to win totals at the end of the season. Why not? I mean, they already set the single-season wins record a season ago, and they added one of the best players in the NBA in Kevin Durant. Is there any reason to believe that this won't work, or is the NBA in 2016, 2017 just it's the Warriors' playground, and everybody's just going to be cannon fodder once again, even more so maybe?
Well, here's the thing about the Warriors. They were up 3-1 in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I know they were.
So, as much as we would like to, you know, anoint them already, and yeah, they added Kevin Durant to that same 73-win team, which is huge. On paper, there's no way anyone's beating the Warriors. But they still have to play the season, and they have to get through it healthy. And, you know, LeBron James is still a player who exists in the Eastern Conference waiting in the finals. You know, the Warriors should justifiably be an enormous favorite to win the title this year. I don't think maybe it's a positive for them that they set the win record last year, and they don't have to, you know, that's kind of something they don't need to worry about this year, if that's something that, you know, hurt them last year chasing that record. But yeah, I think, you know, maybe you give them a little bit of time to figure it out offensively, but this team just has so many weapons. I don't know how you guard them. Even a team like Utah that has incredible length at every position and can kind of switch all over the floor and have Rudy Gobert behind them as a rim protector, you know, you just need so much defensive talent and size to be able to even conceivably slow this team down. It's tough to consider anyone else, you know, as a title favorite other than them, and then, you know, LeBron as a number two probably. But the thing I'm probably most excited about as a trickle down of that move is Russell Westbrook going full John Wick for an entire season and what he's going to do in Oklahoma City. And, you know, if you're a fantasy player at all, I think Westbrook has to be the number one pick.
Yeah.
And I think he has to be on your, you know, on your league pass alert watch list. And anytime he gets going in a game, he's going to be a ton of fun this year. And I hope the Thunder are good enough around him that, you know, maybe we get a Warriors-Thunder playoff series.
Oh.
At some point. Because I think Westbrook going, you know, going toe-to-toe with the entire Warriors team would be just too much fun.
Oh, it would. Okay, I lied. This is the last question. You went to the X for the first time. How was that?
Yeah, it was good. I ate some cricket tacos. And
oh, you did that? You
rolls. I did.
See, I went and I wanted to see how busy that booth was. There was nobody there. It was like a small little booth. I didn't see anybody buy any of those insect dogs. But you had some of it. How was it good?
It was fine. Honestly, the tacos, the crickets are just like, they're in with the sirloin and you can't really taste them beyond like the crunch. And the crispy rolls just kind of tasted like crispy rolls. I don't know. It looked cool, but it really didn't taste all that different or unique. It was fine. It was fun to try.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you can say you did. I went to the Texas State Fair a couple of years ago and I had alligator because you got to say you had alligator.
There you go.
Wasn't that great? It was fine. Yeah, it was fine. So there you go. They're selling the X for you on the
front.
What
am I going to do? Go to the X and have a slice of pizza?
No.
No, I'm going to try something unique to the X.
That's like, oh my goodness. Not to digress, but kind of to digress because I'm on the air for 4 hours on Labor Day. I went to Paris on my honeymoon, and my wife was searching for Mexican food in Paris because she likes Mexican food. You're in Paris. You eat Parisian food. You eat French food. You go to the X, you eat the crickets.
Yeah, I hope she's not listening, though.
There's very little chance of that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Blake.
Thanks so much for having me on, man.